This podcast was specifically created for Distress and Crisis Ontario organizations and their volunteer responders to provide training and educational assistance on a variety of topics. As information evolves and changes, these podcasts are meant to offer ongoing support with the goal of updating them on an ongoing basis. We thank the volunteer responders and the contributors to this podcast. Please visit our website, dcontario.org, for more information and how to access free mental health services. Thank you.
This is Caitlin Plant, Program Coordinator for Distress and Crisis Ontario, and for this week's podcast, I'm joined by Glynis Burkhalter, Program Director at Ray of Hope in Kitchener, Ontario. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Could you please start by giving me a brief overview of what Ray of Hope does, specifically when it comes to your youth addictions treatment program?
Well, Ray of Hope does lots and lots of things, and our youth addiction treatment program is one division of a fairly complex, multifaceted organization. So within Youth Addiction Services, we have four programs that I get to oversee. We have community treatment for 13 to 21-year-old youth, where we provide services for free, and then people who are 22 and over can still continue to access services from us on a fee-for-service basis. So this program is designed for people who are living in the community and want counseling and psychotherapy related to their substance use or other dependency kind of behaviors. During COVID, we're delivering this through in person in our office and through phone and video conferencing. And once COVID is under control, which we hope will be very soon, we will return to delivering this as a mobile service where we do continue to meet people in our office, but we also go out into the community and meet with young people in their schools, in their homes, at local coffee shops where they're comfortable and they're not required to travel to us. Then we have a day treatment program, which is also for youth who are 13 to 21. And in that program, the youth are with us for the length of a school day, which is 5 hours, Monday to Friday. And they usually attend a minimum of one semester. We collaborate with the Waterloo Region District School Board to deliver formal education component as well as recreation and then group and individual counseling. And currently the school board also provides transportation for participants within Waterloo Region. And then we have a residential treatment program for youth who identify as male between 13 and 21 years old. And this is a program that's got variable length of stay, usually between 4 and 6 months. We also collaborate with the school board for this program. So there's formal schooling that's part of the program. And we introduce participants in this program to 12-step groups. Not because 12-step is the only way to get well, but it just is a way that you could be pretty much anywhere and find a 12-step group and find support from people who understand the struggle. So that's why we want to make sure people, our residents, know what it's like to be in those groups and kind of reduce the sense of unsafety at going into a new group. We also do lots of recreation, and we do we have a chaplain that supports that program. So if a young person wants to explore spirituality as part of their recovery, they're able to do it. This is the only program that requires abstinence for the duration of the program, because it basically, for the safety of everybody in the program, we need to have abstinence. But we will support like prescription medications like opioid substitution therapy, that kind of thing. So if and other psychiatric medications as needed. So really, the time away from substances allows bodies and brains to heal and for clarity to develop. And then young people can choose when they're finished with us, what how they want to relate to substances after they've kind of had a rest. So we run our residential program as a therapeutic community. And that means that the youth who are living in the community are encouraged to make it theirs. And our staff support the young men in encouraging one another, providing peer support, peer challenge, and dealing with whatever presents on any given day. So there's individual counseling and there's group counseling. And then there's just life when, you know, stuff happens. And there's a good chunk of that in day treatment as well. Stuff happens and then you end up working through it and learning about how to handle conflict or learning a little bit about how something in the now can bring up stuff from the past and you get swamped by it and then what to do next and all that kind of thing. So our residential program welcomes youth from all over Ontario, but generally the people who participate come from Waterloo, Wellington, the GTA, Niagara, the Near North, and Eastern Ontario. And then we have a parent support program as well. So our community treatment team provides a parent support group that runs fairly regularly. And then we also provide individual and couple counseling to parents and family mediation. For those, the group is free. For the other supports, there may be some fees that apply to that. And then parents are also regularly involved in the treatment journeys of their young people in our day and residential programs. And we're happy to work with the whole family because often when one person is really not doing very well, the whole family is feeling the effects of that, which is totally not surprising. So we take a harm reduction view. So we understand that substances are part of an escape hatch. And when you take all of a sudden all substances or all of the behaviors we use to escape from distress away suddenly, that can leave us feeling like beached whales, panicky, really distressed. So we will begin from the beginning and where are you at and what changes are you ready to consider or make? And then how do we support you in making those? So lots of young people come to us, especially in our outpatient program, saying, well, I'd like to get off the really hard substances because they are doing a lot of damage, but I would like to stay using the softer substances. And so, okay, let's work with that and see how it goes. And then we deal with the situations as they turn up and provide support as they evolve. It's also important to know that all of our programs are trauma informed. So we work from the perspective that not everybody has trauma, but if we treat everybody as if they do, then we're going to make sure we're not harming some people who actually do have trauma. Realistically, adverse childhood experiences, accidents, brain injuries, that kind of thing are really common among our client group. And so the trauma-informed approach actually is hugely important and it makes a big difference. And we do actually do trauma-specific treatment as well. So just being part of a group of like in day treatment or residential treatment or even coming into community treatment and telling your story for the first time and being supported through that, those are all ways that we help the nervous system re-regulate. And as we re-regulate the nervous system, then the reliance on whatever we were becoming addicted to cope is shifted and changed. So it's a gentler way of coming at things. And the other thing we do that's kind of, I don't think that I know any other publicly funded program that's doing this, is that we do neurooptimal neurofeedback. A few years ago, I was doing research on how to help brains heal, and there's discovered that there's really interesting research supporting neurofeedback as being a useful intervention or auxiliary support for people who have experienced trauma. And so collaborated with some local neurofeedback providers to do a trial run. And found that our participants really were impressed. So neurooptimal neurofeedback basically just gives live feedback to the brain that it's dysregulated, and then the brain self-corrects. We don't tell the brain to do anything. It just, oh, it's sort of like if you get up in the morning and your hair is a complete schmozzle, you could have a meltdown over that, or you could kind of go, oh, where's a comb? And so basically neurofeedback provides the feedback to the brain that it's out of sync, and then the brain self-corrects because it's cool that way. So clients have reported things like feeling less anxious, better sleep, better focus, and many of them report the really positive physical sensations of calm that they have previously associated with substance use. And now they had those experiences without substance use, which was a revelation. And so we do neurofeedback. Any of our youth clients can access neurofeedback for free. And everybody else can access it on a sliding fee scale.
So is neurofeedback something that happens in sessions with somebody who teaches you how to do it, or is it something separate?
Well, neurofeedback is a separate event. So it takes about 30 minutes to run through a training session. And it involves like just hooking up a couple of sensors to your head. And then you just sit quietly while the machine interacts with your brain. And it's actually fairly peaceful. And then it's a totally separate event than a counseling session. And we have neurofeedback available in all of our like community, day, and residential programs.
It's very interesting. It's something I've never heard of before.
It is very cool. Yeah, I really like it. So yeah, all it's important that I stress that all of our programs are voluntary. It's not uncommon to meet pretty stressed out, depressed, and desperate parents who've got a young person who is in the throes of a great deal of distress and not coping terribly well. And they would like to just come and drop that person off to us. But the young person actually has to see the value of what treatment might offer and then be willing to participate in treatment. My mom has a famous saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And so even if that horse has been using a lot of weed, you still can't make it drink if it doesn't want to. So we take the approach of basically motivational interviewing and stage related responses. So if a person is pre-contemplative and we interact with them as if they're ready to go, we basically alienate them. But if we actually meet them at their place of, I don't have a problem, my parents have a problem, and kind of, all right, so what do you want to do about that? We find that young people are actually more willing than to come back later and say, okay, you respected me, therefore I want to hear more about what you have to say. And we're very compassionate and concerned for parents, because it is really terrifying to have a child who's quite unwell. And that's why we have parent support, because actually parents do need support. It is a very lonely, there's a lot of self-judgment and a lot of outside judgment as well that's directed at parents when their kids are not doing well. And parent support is just a great place for parents to regroup and shift what's happening in themselves. And as they shift, often that shifts their child's response to the idea of treatment as well. So it's a whole family thing.
You teach them how to meet them where they're at.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So the next logical question to ask is how someone listening to this podcast would reach out to you to access one of your programs if they have heard something that they are interested in trying.
They can get to us through our website, rayofhope.net. They can also email us at yasinquiries@rayofhope.net, or they could phone us at 519-743-2311, extension 516.
Is there a wait list for your programs?
Right now, there is a short wait list for residential. And I think the other programs are, we still have like admission can happen fairly quickly.
So an important question to know the answer to is how you determine when a client is ready to move on from your program. Based on what we've already talked about, I assume that it's very client driven in that you're not going to continue to treat someone who feels like they don't need to be treated any further. But how do you come to the decision that, yeah, someone is ready to move on?
Well, there's other things. So knowing somebody's ready to leave treatment, ready to graduate, we'll call it. You're right. It's not a one size fits all. When we recognize that problematic substance use or other addictive behaviors or other dependencies are escape hatches, like they really are the ways that our bodies discover to give us a break from suffering, right? So if we're feeling overwhelmed in one area of our life, then a substance or a video game or chocolate cake or potato chips can all provide a period an experience of relief and calm and distraction or oblivion, depending on what you're using, right? And I think most of us know that feeling of, you know, I feel so awkward about a party. I think I'd like to get something on board first, or I'm so stressed out. I'm just going to focus on a video game, or I'm going to read a book all day, or I'm going to eat a whole lot of food. And most of us, if we're honest, recognize that most of us do that at some point. And the difference, I guess, between somebody who's gotten stuck into what looks like an addictive relationship to those things is that their level of internal distress is so high that the compulsion to escape is just nonstop. The tough thing about addiction too is that the more it initially tells us, hey, see, you can get out scot-free, there's no pain here, but then it actually adds newer layers of pain. So that basically we know somebody doesn't need us anymore when they've learned how to notice they're uncomfortable and they've developed and consistently use their harm reduction skills and their safer coping skills, that they've been able to bring some healing into their relationships so that they have a circle of support around them that they know how to use and they do use in order to deal with the crappy days. And they have developed some self-compassion for themselves. They're engaged in activities like work or school, and they can handle the stress of those kinds of things. And they have a discharge plan that's going to support them as they move forward. None of us have all of our poo in a tidy pile all the time. No one. Like, that just doesn't exist. But we aim for having most of it in a relatively under control pile most of the time. And then days when it escapes from us and we have the skills for kind of marshalling it back. It makes poo sound alive, but anyhow, and there are days when that's exactly how it feels. The poop is following me. So fair enough. And youth who graduate from our residential and day programs can actually link into community treatment and continue with community treatment as long as they're participating and it's useful for them. And then youth who are actually from out of region, then as they are preparing for discharge from residential, we would be working with resources in their home communities so that they have a counselor and they have a circle of support when they go home. And that's all the introductions have happened. There's already connection happening.
So unsurprisingly, it sounds like you have very good plans in place to support someone who's moving out of your program. Do you have any additional resources that you could suggest outside of your program for someone who is looking either for help for themselves or for someone that they know?
A couple of things. So in most areas of Ontario, there is some kind of access point for the local addiction and mental health services. Mm-hmm. So locally in Waterloo region and Wellington, it's here 24/7.
Yep.
And so basically if you're concerned, you can go in through there, or the internet is a great place to find resources. When it comes to looking for something that you can access that's a bit more peer oriented or community based, then the 12-step groups like AA, NA, Al-Anon, and Alateen are are very useful. Mm-hmm. I know that there are people who say those groups just don't work for me. Fair enough. It's the one size fits all thing, right? Mm-hmm. Fair. But for the people where it does work, there's a group everywhere and most days of the week. And it's all peers, people who also understand the struggle and have taken it on and made some progress. Mm-hmm. For folks who have a Christian framework, then Celebrate Recovery it's not a 12-step group exactly, but it is a peer-oriented recovery program for people who want particularly want a Christian perspective, because mm-hmm. the 12-step isn't particularly Christian. And then when I was looking at this, I was like, oh, I can think of a whole bunch of books, but I really don't think a podcast is a place to list off a bunch of books. But certainly if you go to your local library and you check in what's in their card catalog or their online catalog, you'll find all kinds of really lovely stuff written by thoughtful people who are in recovery or about recovery. And reading through the internet is or through actual books, a really useful way for many people to connect with ideas that are new. So those would be things I would suggest off the top of my head.
Yeah, okay. And I feel like the more resources you find, the more you know that you're not alone.
That's the huge part. And I think it's been surprising because the young guys in residential, and even at times we've taken our day treatment group to 12-step groups, one of the things they consistently report, even if they don't like the idea of 12-step, but they go because the whole community is going, they come to appreciate the humanity of other people and to realize that there's a community of people getting well.
Yeah.
That they are not alone in some weird, isolated, shameful, no way out place. There are actually lots of people who struggle with aspects of their life and who get well. Mm-hmm. Every day, millions of people are getting well.
I feel like that's important, especially for young people, because no matter what you're struggling with as a young person, you always feel like you're going through those feelings alone and you're the only person in the world who's ever felt that way. And it's so important to see that, no, actually other people have had these struggles and other people have made it through these struggles and these feelings and have turned out well.
I think one of the tough things about being a child and or being young is you're new. So you really don't know the scope of how many people are with you. Mm-hmm. And it's and that's part of what we want people to understand, is you are not that unique. You are special and there's only you, but your experience is not utterly unique. And there are others who know the way out.
Yeah. So as we wrap up this week's podcast, the only other question I have for you is whether there's anything that we haven't already covered that you would like to add.
Actually, it's funny because the things I had put in my already, tucked to the end, I've actually woven in somewhere else. So
perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate this. And I'm sure that all of the information you've shared is going to be very, very helpful to some people.
Well, I'm really grateful for the opportunity and it was lovely to meet you.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm Damien, one of the editors of the DCO Learning Forums podcast. We are committed to providing the most current and up-to-date information. With your help, we can make it better. Please consider going to tips.pinecast.com/jar/distress and crisis Ontario. And by donating, monthly contributors will be able to access a special podcast feed. In it, we'll have additional content and some more in-depth pieces on some of our most popular topics. Thank you.